The masters almost surely have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. And until you've thoroughly tested every last close trusted view, I find the more you think you know, the less you really do.
That's true, Dr. Zaius.
Very well.
Where would we be without THC? 'Cause we know they're lying to us, just don't know.
Happy days are here again, Higher Side Chatters. How the hell are you? Doing what I do in sunny San Diego, just trying to get a handle on this weird world. I'm Greg Carlwood, and as you know, we've been examining the ET situation for a long time, and I don't think you can have a full diagram of the planetary power pyramid of puppet masters without leaving a space for this non-human presence. And whether you're looking at the rituals of the Skull and Bones or the Ordo Templi Orionis or the Bohemian Grove Club, I see a veneration for something, a worship of something that seems a little more real than what's going on in Sunday Mass. And we've been talking about this proverbial deal with the devil, the Faustian pact, this let me have a little bit of your power and I'll serve you idea that the elite might be playing with, and I'm becoming fairly convinced that this is a vague description of the situation. And when we get into why some multidimensional extraterrestrial beings would even bother with our global elite, to me the only purpose that serves is secrecy and middle management. And when you examine what happens in these cases, what abductions seem to be about, and the messages people leave these encounters with, it seems like the agenda is to merge our genetics with theirs. Whether it's for their own needs of survival or to unlock some unique human characteristic is unclear, but as transhumanism hits the forefront of the counterculture and the Hollywood propaganda machine, it's starting to feel like the fog on this hazy agenda is starting to lift. Well, lucky for us in this dense, complex material, today we have the champion of conspiratorial clarification, Linda Moulton Howe. First, we are going to hear from September's Money Bomb winner real quick. All you know by now, I take half of the donations in a given month and gift them back to a random listener. And this past month, Nate took it home. It was $297. Here's a quick check-in with him. And we'll be getting into all the latest details of Linda's research into the ET phenomenon and the larger agenda on the other side.
Greg, thank you so much for the money bomb. You're awesome. I'm going to throw a dollar at freebarrettbrown.org. That's the Courage Foundation, and y'all should check that out. I love your show. I just finished the A432 frequency episode. It's mind-blowing. I also really love the old Firebird episode. I saw Firebird when I was a kid, so thanks for putting a name on that. And in the future, I'd really like to hear more about Central and South America, current events maybe. Why do we have the School of the Americas? What's our agenda there? Why do we get away with so much terrorism when we claim we're trying to prevent terrorism? Yeah, so shed a light on that. I'd really appreciate it. And keep on rocking. Thanks a lot.
Active and park it, tune in and spark it, 'cause Greg's about to open up your mind. About the secret manipulation and the wisest aficionados he can find. And he's pulling back the curtain on what we thought we knew for certain, so we can see the world with a brand new set of eyes. You're listening to the Higher Side.
Alright people, we know the world is full of weirdness just beyond the humdrum 9-to-5 they put before us, and today's guest has been hot on the trail of nearly all of it. Animal mutilations, strange booms, extraterrestrial biological entity encounters, strange black ops projects, genetic experimentation, and everything else that makes up the mysterious magnitude of alternative information that she chronicles at earthfiles.com. One of the most well-respected and journalistic sites dig into these depths of the rabbit hole. Gearing up for her presentation at the Secret Space Program Conference in Austin, Texas, you know her, you love her, Linda Moulton Howe. Welcome to THC.
Well, thank you very much, and I am really looking forward to the gathering near Austin at the end of October. I think that this Secret Space Program 2015 is coming at exactly the right time, because a lot of us know that there is a secret space program and there has been a secret space program for decades. It's time that the taxpayers knew.
Yes, agreed. Cheers to that, Linda. And I am so happy to finally have you on. You've definitely done a lot to move my needle further into the fringe over the years and make these strange topics seem a lot more palatable. And I've also loved hearing you at Contact in the Desert the last few times. There are so many things I'd like to talk to you about, and things seem to be moving so fast, it seems like you're on a new thread every week. So to get the ball rolling here, tell us a little bit about what's got your attention at the moment.
Well, first, I wish that everybody working in media would drop the word fringe, drop the word paranormal, drop the word supernatural. We're talking about a physical universe. We're talking about the earth that we live on, and that this is the discovery. It's science and environment. This is a discovery that there is an alien presence on earth, and it has been here for millions of years, according to whistleblowers who have talked to me. And the more we would move away as people who are journalists and in the media and doing web, if we can move away and change all of the words that people now look at what we're going to talk about as this is reality, these are facts, this is not something on the fringe, I think it would help the audiences to listen and not think that they were listening to something that might not be true and was on the margin. Everything that I am trying to report and do and in my books and documentaries and DVDs now and web reporting, I am trying to bring facts to bear. I'm trying to bring firsthand eyewitnesses to bear. And that to me separates now from what once upon a time, the government of the United States with England, they got away with policies of denial and lies because they could generate hubcaps in the air, photograph them by government cameras, distribute them to media that was willing to cooperate after World War II with anything that the government told them to do, and say, there is no UFO phenomenon. We are alone in the universe. Here is a hubcap that proves that all of these thousands of people reporting some kind of disc in the skies, that they're all delusional. And that's so important today, to draw the line in the sand and say, historically, we now understand how the government accomplished that. Counterintelligence that got us through World War II, they are very brilliant. They are extremely competent when it comes to somebody giving them an assignment and said, you go out and you make sure that there isn't anybody on the planet who is going to believe that there is a 2-mile triangle over Phoenix or a 100-foot disc over Texas. All of this is the legacy from policies of denial that were set in motion by Eisenhower, Churchill, and Truman during and after World War II. And something has been shifting rapidly, I would say myself, in the last decade, where the people of this planet, not just the United States, we are 7.2 billion people. And as the population has grown, it has been harder and harder for the governments to put out all of these phony stories, phony photographs, and make them stick. Because the number of people who have been experiencing high strangeness, that has been rising. And when you are looking at it all from where I sit every day, excuse me, and the number, hundreds of emails are coming to me literally every day, thousands in a month, and this is nonstop. These are not coming from people who are wild-eyed. These are coming from people who sign their emails as professors in universities, working for government agencies, working for police departments, airline pilots. And they are telling really legitimate stories, but here is the current problem. Lots of professionals, but they know that they could still lose their jobs if they're public with their names and identity.
Right.
So tragically and sadly, I still have to say, I promise I will keep your name, your title, your location, anonymous, but what is important is to report what you know are facts. So I try to do that at earthfiles.com on a regular basis because the information is so important. And here is what is very, very, I think, strong for everybody listening to keep in mind. For every report that I do at earthfiles.com, whether it is with somebody who is requesting anonymity or they're willing to go on the record with their name, I must get 100 more emails for every story of people saying, I've never told anybody this before, but I just read your report and I hear a vast more increased number of stories. A good example is that on Thursday, going from September 24th to 25th, starting at midnight to 3 a.m. for me, Mountain Time, mm-hmm. the last Thursday of every month, I do Earth Files News on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Right.
And each half hour is it moves from the first half hour to the second, third, and fourth through different subjects that I think are current and important to report. And in this most recent, my second half hour was with a massage therapist in Chicago, Illinois, who contacted me. And we did an interview recorded about her having her hands at the back of the neck of a woman who had come to it's a prestigious sort of like a gym and massage and all of that.
Like a spa?
Yeah, like a spa, $100 an hour. So she's used to clients. She got her professional license in Chicago in 2001. This is an event that happened around the 2005-06 period, which shows you she waited until 2015 to finally get in touch, in this case with me, because she had see me on television on History Channel's Ancient Aliens, and she had heard me on Coast to Coast AM, and she had seen Earth Files reports, and she decided, as she said in her email, I have been living with this puzzle since 2005 to 2006, and I decided I really wanted to see if somebody could help me understand, and she reached out, and we did this recording. And I put it on Coast to Coast. I have since, let's see, it's been now from, I got off the air at 3 a.m. on Friday, and you and I are talking on Saturday the 26th. Mm-hmm. And in the 24 hours after the broadcast, I have received at least 115 emails, and they are coming. It's a constant stream from people who are telling me their own experiences with seeing some kind of a gray-looking body floating up out of a human, lots of it in massage, Reiki, various states of what we would call relaxation. But I never expected that there would be this much. And yesterday, in the afternoon of Friday, I did an hour special with Whitley Strieber for his Unknown Country Dreamland. Mm-hmm. And to my astonishment, Whitley, for the very first time ever, described that he has had the same experience, understands it, has had people who have communicated, but he had never reported it until I did the Coast broadcast. And then we decided we would do one with him yesterday. So now we have expanded the territory and the feedback that is coming. What does it mean? What in the world does it mean that perhaps hundreds, thousands of people have been sitting on a phenomena that they have not shared about being massage therapists and seeing what looks like a black almond-shaped, black-eyed, shaped like almonds, large head, gray, slit mouth, thin neck, gray body, and not human, come up out of a body, a human body that is being massaged, what does it mean? Well, it isn't just right now. As I opened up in my broadcast, both for Coast and with Dreamland, in the 1980s, after I had produced A Strange Harvest, the documentary about animal mutilations around the world, and had law enforcement telling me, people forget this as well, it was law enforcement telling me, the director of special projects at the CBS station in Denver, I had won all kinds of awards, had a national Emmy nomination where I went back to New York City because the documentaries that I was doing on the environment and science and medicine were having impacts, and that's part of what national Emmys for documentaries are related to. So I had done A Strange Harvest on the animal mutilations, and that seemed to open up a door, like it's happening today at more levels. It opened up a door for people who had never talked, even to their families, to come out, come to me, starting to report all kinds of high strangeness that went beyond what I had focused on, animal mutilations. And this was about 2 or 3 years after that broadcast. And it's memorable because I had never heard anything like it before then, and ties to today. I got a call from a massage therapist in Boulder, Colorado. Now, in Boulder, Colorado, in the 1980s, massage therapy was a huge part of the community. When you think about East Coast cities, they have always put massage having to do with some form of prostitution. It's never been fair historically. Colorado was completely the opposite. So many people use massage therapists for massage therapy in the state of Colorado. So it was not unusual to get a phone call from somebody in Boulder, especially, saying, Linda, I saw you on television. I've just had something that is freaked me out. I don't understand it. I've seen you on television. I figured that I could call you and you might be able to explain to me what has just happened. And here, briefly, she was massaging. It was a male client. She had her hands on his chest. And then suddenly she can't move her hands. She can't move her body. She doesn't know what is happening. The man is not saying anything or doing anything, but coming up out of the man's body, translucent, just like the Chicago case recently, translucent. She can see her hands through this gray body that is rising up, and she cannot move. She cannot yell. She can't do anything. She's frozen. But whatever this phenomena is, it was able to keep rising past her hands, her arms, up into the air. And it seemed to fade out, and she described the black-eyed, shaped almond, slanted, the same that I just described from the Chicago massage therapist.
Wow.
She said when it faded out in the sky, in the air, in the room, she suddenly, everything, her hands could move, her arms could move, she could talk. And she said, Linda, I was so scared. I didn't even want to say to the client on the masseuse, on the massage table, what just happened.
Right.
Now, think about that. She's had this experience. She doesn't even talk with the man who has had no reaction, doesn't say anything, doesn't, his eyes are still closed. He's unaware. But she calls and tells me that. It was very shortly thereafter that I got a call from a male massage therapist in Memphis, Tennessee, and it was the same story, exactly. So now, I had those two cases as a background for the 1980s. I never had received any other reports until the woman in Chicago. I put it on the air in two broadcasts, and I now have over 100 emails coming from people all over the country, and some in Canada as well, saying that they've had a similar experience, either watching somebody in a massage, or it's been some meditative or massage experience. And everybody is saying the same thing, including Whitley Strieber, who has had the experience himself. He said, Linda, what do you think this means?
Right.
And I turned it around to him and I said, Whitley, of all of us, you are the one person that I know who has had the longest, closest, we'll call it interactive experiences with the non-human intelligence, at least one type, the grays. And what do you think is happening? And he said, very straightforwardly and honestly, I think that there is a physics, a technology, that the grays are able to project some. Now, this is the question. Are they projecting a life force from themselves into humans in order to learn what it is like to be human, and that their gray physical body is it inanimate someplace, or are they able to split into two, which has been what several people in the abduction syndrome over decades have suggested, that we are dealing with an intelligence that can be, let's say that it's a Zeta Reticuli 1 and 2 or in a completely different galaxy. It literally has been able to make drones, what we would call androids, that can come into other galaxies, do physical exploration, match the biology of whatever these exploratory androids are with the planet that they are assigned to explore, and that splitting in two, Jim Sparks has talked about this quite in detail, that he was shown that they can project a percentage of whatever their consciousness is into human bodies. And that the difference is that Jim Sparks has never described seeing the pale, translucent version of a gray rising up out of somebody in massage. But the physics of this might be somewhat similar between the Jim Sparks experience, talking about a technology that doesn't even have to leave its home planet and can send out androids that can have a percentage of consciousness that can enter humans to learn. So there's the common denominator. Enter humans to learn.
Wow.
I remember another very important case, and we'll lead in from all of this. We'll lead into this whole question that I'm going to be talking about in the Bastrop Convention Center, November 1st of 2015. And that has to do, my subject is self-activating software and technology that is alien.
Mm-hmm.
That whole big subject now relates to what I'm beginning to enter into, is this question of what kind of physics are we dealing with and how would it work? Well, there was a case. It was outside of Manhattan in Hoboken. And the man was an artist. It started when he was in his probably his teenage years. He would be waked up at night, and what I'm beginning to unfold has been reported thousands of times by men around the world. And he would see a version of a female that was not human, but was female, floating over his bed, on the bed. There would be sexual intercourse. And it would happen on a frequent basis. And he began to understand this was not a human female, and that the whole point was his ejaculation of sperm, and that he knew that she was a holographic projection over a technology that was there to gather sperm. And other men have described this, but his is the most detailed, and it leads to I've always kept this case as remember this with David Huggins in Hoboken, New Jersey, because someday this might, what I'm going to now share, might be very, very important in understanding why the non-humans are here, how they interact, male and female, and what it is that is most valuable to them. So now, going beyond the collection of sperm through something that seems to be like a holographic projection. One night, after this had been going on for several years, a praying mantis, and the praying mantis type shows up in various, whether it's in front of human females or human males or even human children. 7 to 8 foot tall, looks just like on Earth what would be like a praying mantis, green, large, scares people to death for a fraction of a second to a second or two. And then however the praying mantis manages this, I don't know a human who has had this experience with the praying mantises that have not had this next part happen. The human is flooded with peace, relaxation from their fear, telepathic communication from this huge, gigantic, insect-looking being. And every man, woman, and teenager that I've ever talked to who has encountered one of these things says almost exactly the same words. Have no fear. I'm not here to hurt you. And they feel a flood of huge sadness coming from this. And they get a telepathic, sometimes an image, sometimes a telepathic download. And this is the part that's impossible for the human to comprehend. But this is what is almost universal in the interaction with these praying mantises. They are given images of our solar system. They recognize our solar system. And the being communicates that its job has been to seed life in planets, Earth being one of many, and that the praying mantis in front of the human is as old as our solar system. Now, our solar system is supposed to be 4.6 billion years old. The idea that there could be a continuous organic life form that could sustain itself mentally, physically, spiritually, any other way for 4.6 billion years is outside of any frame of understanding that humans could ever have, right?
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean that human knowledge is all there is. It just means that when everybody reaches that point that a 7 to 8 foot tall praying mantis insect is communicating that it is a seeder of life in solar systems and that it is as old as our solar system, where it has seeded life on other planets and Earth, that everybody goes tilt. And I understand why. But with that as sort of background, I'm now going to tell you what happened with David Huggins in Hoboken, New Jersey, across the river from New York, after having years of knowing that sperm was being collected from him. And now one of these tall praying mantises with a detail that David Huggins, because he was a painter, painted in oil painting that I have used in slides, that we'll call it the lower half. Think of a praying mantis's, how the face comes down to a narrow point. In his And surprisingly enough, I've learned over time, other people have seen this, but they were afraid to say it because they were already describing something so strange. He drew or painted that in the lower part of the praying mantis's head, it glowed light. That glowing of light in the praying mantis's face, when you listen to other people who have encountered the praying mantises, and because I have had that background with David Huggins, I can ask people, was there anything else unusual about the praying mantis's face? I'd say 6 out of 10 people say, oh God, it even glowed light. I've heard this, right? Okay, so these are the things that the more cases you have and you begin to learn, ask. You don't want to lead. You don't want to say, did you see light?
Right.
That's wrong. Every reporter and investigator should never, ever lead. But you can ask legitimately that question. Was there anything else unusual about the head or the face? That's a legitimate question.
Right.
And when you hear 6 out of 10 people say, oh my God, it was glowing light, then you know that David Huggins' oil painting going back, he drew that or painted that in the early 1970s.
Wow.
You have to take it seriously. And here's now what he said next happened. The praying mantis, this is all telepathic, puts images and thoughts into David Huggins, who is standing stark naked in the, it was like a big living room with a bed at one end. So he didn't have like an apartment or a house. He had like a loft type place. So he has gotten out of bed, and now there is a female that looks exactly like all of these females that have, or a female image that has come and collected sperm. Now there is one standing next to him. He's standing. She's standing. This is now not like the holographic drama. And the praying mantis is in front of both of them. And he gets the download, essentially that now David Huggins loves this form, this white-skinned, black-eyed female form that he associates with all this collection of sperm. And the praying mantis is saying, and I want you to now understand that I, the praying mantis, am going to place her, who you now love, inside of you so she can learn. Now, here's the part. David Huggins sees, he watches this with his human eyes and retina. He's totally conscious. The female form dissolves, transforms, whatever verb, into a ball of light. It is gold. And that ball of light comes into his chest abdomen area, enters him. He's completely conscious. He feels a warmth entering him. And he said, and then the praying mantis fades away. Here was this huge thing in his room, and it fades away. How did they do this? How is the technology for the fading in, fading out, popping in, popping out? That's a whole other issue of this self-activating software that I'm going to be talking about at the Austin conference, the Secret Space conference. But David Huggins, who called me only a couple of years ago, just as an update, I asked him, is she still in you? And he said, no, she was there, and he knew she was there for 2 or 3 years. And it gave him oddly comfort. He said he was never afraid of it, but the collection of the sperm stopped 100%. There was no more of that. She's now living inside of him, looking through his eyes and mind, and who knows, I'm filling in here on the assumption that all of our senses and what we are as humans can somehow be entered, and that whatever form you want to say that light is, it is a consciousness using human consciousness to learn and can leave. Mm-hmm. Now, Whitley used almost the same words yesterday in the very, he said it's the first time he had ever described his own experience with this. And he said his residue was and is that these beings, the gray ones, do have this ability in a form that he doesn't understand. Whitley doesn't pretend to understand anything about the physics of this, and neither do I. But you have to take the human abduction syndrome and say, in a person, let's say me, I've interviewed personally in depth about 1,500 people over the last 35 years. And when you do that, you begin to get sort of a playing field, if that's a term, meaning it's kind of a bell-shaped curve of experiences. And in that, you begin to, as soon as somebody says a particular color, a ball of light, whatever it is, you then have all this background in your own experience that you now are going to ask questions to see, not to lead, but just to see if anything more comes out that's on this big playing field or profile of what others have experienced.
Right.
And when you step back from this and you see that in now about 36 hours from the Coast broadcast and less than 24 hours from the Dreamland broadcast, that I have over 100, and I'm talking substantive emails. These are intelligent, well-written people who are from all over the place geographically, who have been provoked to now tell something that they've never shared with another human being.
Wow.
Now take this and let's go a month forward to Bastrop outside of Austin, Texas. And there is going to be this gathering for the Secret Space program 2015. And that I'm going to be taking from all of this river of communication that comes to me on a regular basis, that includes people who have been, I think, legitimate whistleblowers, and that I have sort of it's like I'm going to try to present what would be common denominators that have come from whistleblowers that all add up to self-activating software in self-activating machines and interacting on this planet for a very long time. And here is the kicker. Those self-activating technologies with complex self-activating software that needs no other mind, organic mind presence for it to operate at every level, including repairing itself. The prime intelligence that has made all of this self-activating technology, including androids, could be literally on the other side of this universe. That's how complex the whole phenomena is.
God, that's a pretty mind-blowing possibility. Now, when I heard you talking about this Chicago masseuse case, you mentioned the person's cell phone making a strange noise. It seemed like it played a role, perhaps. Maybe it was a catalyst for what was going on. And I wondered if this is something you see in other cases, some kind of sound or frequency technology allowing these beings to phase in and out, perhaps.
Thank you for bringing it up, because the whole issue of frequency seems to be key to all of the phenomena, and that frequencies, in this case, it was the cell phone that the very well-dressed, expensive-looking woman had a large and expensive handbag. And the massage therapist, Cindy Schilf, she allowed me to use her real name. Cindy Schilf said it was always standard operation. You ask anybody, male, female, please shut off. Don't put it on pause or quiet. Shut off your cell phone so they cannot go off during the massage. And she watched, and she said this in my interview. I watched her, Linda. She went off. She clicked the button three times, off, off, off. Put the cell phone back in her expensive handbag. And then the massage began, normal, routine, absolutely nothing unusual. And here is another part of this that I think is very significant, because this also comes up in the human abduction syndrome. Cindy Schilf says that her mind began drifting into thoughts and images of gray aliens and finds her own mental processes wondering, why am I thinking about gray aliens? And then all of this happened very suddenly, all within seconds, that when she says, why am I thinking? And then she's looking at the body of the woman. Are you an alien? Huh. And immediately, all of this, she sees the, and Drew, I think her illustration is just excellent at earthfiles.com. She said at first it was as if the sheet over the woman's body transformed very quickly with zigzag lines that she drew. And then when I said, do you mean like electrostatic energy? She said, Linda, that's it, electrostatic energy. And that becoming visible in the zigzag electrostatic energy is the form of the gray. So that there was a rapid transition in which the sheet itself over the woman seemed to be at the first, what do we call it? The first level that Cindy could see of this change, which was rapidly transforming into the gray, to the exclusion when this transition was over in a matter of a second. The female woman can no longer be seen. It's as if the female woman now is completely transformed into that gray. And that Cindy said, she now, oh my God, it is an alien, came that sound that she tried to mimic. And her words were different than what she was able to utter as a human. That it was metallic. She compared it to the trumpet sounds that people have recorded on the planet since 2011. And they don't know what those trumpet sounds are, but it's metallic, but more of a metallic scraping sound with air in it. That's how she tried to describe what she heard, that she estimated that it must have been there for 3 seconds. And then the woman is back, and Cindy is saying, and the woman is saying almost simultaneously, I thought I shut it off. So now, is it that the alien presence can use cell phones for anything that they want? Meaning, we have a digital technology that is now networking the whole planet, maybe inspired by non-humans because they wanted this to occur. Everybody's got now these 3x5 or 4x6 the growing, maybe 5x7 iPhones, that the alien presence can interact with humans now much more easily. That's a possibility. A lot of people have questioned that. And that the frequency with which the non-humans do anything that we don't understand, that whatever occurred in that cell phone, as Cindy said, it was like watching, get back in your, she said, get back into your cage. And then I said, what is it that you saw? And she said, well, very rapidly, it reminded me of something like molecules coming back together, like, get back into your shape. And then the woman was there. And so the only thing that you can say caused that to happen was the sound. Mm-hmm. And why was this freaky sound emanating from the cell phone only once for 3 seconds? And Cindy said, you know, if it's a normal phone that goes off, you have a ring and then a ring and then a ring and so forth. This was just one blast that seemed to bring the gray alien transition to an end. And the woman was there. And just like those cases that I told you about in Boulder and Memphis,
right,
the woman did not have, she didn't even, there was nothing beyond the sound of her phone going off and herself. I thought I shut that off. The woman had no awareness of what it was that Cindy Shulf saw happen. And Cindy Shulf, like the other two, said literally nothing to the woman, nothing about what just happened. Did you know that a gray being just came? Nothing. So you have a disconnect that the humans who observe this in other humans are so shocked, are so stunned, they can't have dialogue with the person that they saw just transition from a gray. What would happen in those moments if humans did say, do you know that I just saw you turn into a gray being? What happened? What would the response be? My guess is there is no consciousness, that it is not like David Huggins knowing that he saw a transition into a ball of light entering, that humans are not aware that in the 7.2 billion now living, it's in fact, I think the new number is 7.6 billion, keeps going up exponentially all the time, the population on Earth, that there probably, there might be hundreds of thousands of people who have some, we'll call it technological relationship, in which grays are seeing the world and feeling emotions and doing all of this through humans, and they haven't got a clue.
Mm-hmm.
Back to Cindy's question to me and to Whitley's question, what does this mean? What are all of these learning episodes, if you put it that way, being able to be students of Earth by somehow technologically putting consciousness of the grays inside of human consciousness for some period of time? What is that evolving toward?
Right. It's a lot of trouble and effort just to occupy a human body. There must be something else we don't understand. What's the end goal here?
Exactly. And I do not have an answer. Whitley Strieber does not have an answer. Jim Mars does not have an answer. None of us have an answer to that question. And then jump to where the whistleblowers come from, the government and the military. You get the impression that these guys who whistleblow, they become exposed to some small piece. They either, it's because they're in a military operation and they see non-humans, not necessarily grays, there are other types, but they see non-humans during a black ops operation. They know that we're working with some kind of non-humans. They know that we have a secret space program. They know that we are very concerned about some kind of intelligence coming from outside of our satellites to Earth. Everybody who has tried to investigate a lot into the extraterrestrial question, it doesn't take long that you have people that are frustrated or angry because they do not think it is right, that they know that there are non-humans among us. They know that the government is working with non-humans, and they think that the human family should know. That's why they're whistleblowers.
Mm-hmm. Well, Linda, that pretty much brings us to the end of the show. Fascinating stuff. Again, earthfiles.com is your website, and you're going to be at the Secret Space Program Conference in Austin, Texas, the weekend of the 31st of October. Is there anything else you'd like to tell the listeners before we call it a day?
I just want them to know you are an extremely intelligent interviewer, and it has been a pleasure to work with you today.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot coming from you in particular. You're one of my favorite alternative journalists. You're always well-researched, and you make the most far-out possibilities seem so plausible, and that's a beautiful thing. So thank you so much. Have a great time in Austin. Hopefully we can do this again sometime.
And just take that word alternative away. I am a mainstream reporter and always have been.
Fair point, fair point. I'm going to have to retrain myself. But thanks again, Linda. This has been awesome. Keep doing what you do and take care.
Thank you.
Whoa, guys. Whoa. Linda Moulton Howe. Let's hear it. I'm talking about some really interesting sagas and corroborating encounters that might give us some clues into the larger agenda. And I think it does. And it's great to hear about these things in a format that isn't limited by commercial breaks and egotistical hosts. Linda does not really need assistance, and I thought it was great. I actually tried to chime in even less than normal because Linda's speakers were a little loud, and it was causing some feedback when I would speak. I spliced out as much of it as I could, but you did probably hear a little bit of it. And hopefully we can talk to her again, because I have a lot of questions we couldn't get into, but Linda has no shortage of fascinating material. Beings embedded into unknowing human hosts, animal mutilation, self-activating extraterrestrial machinery. Where have we heard that before? Sounds a little bit like Hattiebov's paradigm to me. Machines set to autopilot, monitoring the Earth and controlling this terrarium just beyond the electromagnetic spectrum? I don't know. But if you did like the first hour, you know we have the extended second hour with all the great guests here, and today is no different. With Linda, we got into more ideas of the big agenda, the Prometheus archetype, the Randlesham Forest incident as an example of this self-activating alien hardware, hunting for samples, and we speculate on what is it about humans that makes us so special in this scenario. It's a fascinating time with a legendary researcher and a real milestone for me. And after 5 years of building up this show and going for who I think are the best of the best, there's very few people left to scratch off my shortlist, and Linda was definitely one of them. So big thanks to her. Definitely keep up with her detailed and journalistic reporting at earthfiles.com. And if you're in the Midwest, journey down to the Secret Space Program Conference. I went to the one last year in California, had a great time. And I'm sure Austin's going to be a blast too. Use that coupon code SSPTHC2015 if you plan to go and get yourself some cheaper tickets. You are welcome. And I guess that's it for your favorite show and your humble host here. I will see you next time, but until then, your move, Prometheus. Your frickin' move.
No one knows what it's like to be the bad man. Be the sad man behind blue eyes. And no one knows what it's like to be hated, to be faded, to telling only lies. But my dreams aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. I have hours only lonely since they exposed me on THC. What it's like to feel these feelings, like I do, and I blame you. No one bites back as hard on their anger. None of my pain and woe can show through, but my dreams aren't as empty as my conscience seems to be. I have hours always lonely since they exposed me on THC. Sad man behind.